listening to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business.
Hello everyone, I'm here with Nick Gibbon of Belmont Farm and Equine Vets. Nick facilitates a discussion group consisting of seven meadow quality calf rearers, which AHDB have been funding. Over the past 18 months, Nick has been asking the calf rearers to collect data on how each calf performs and any health treatments that they have been given. He has just presented these findings back to the group, and I'm keen to find out more. So thanks for talking to me today, Nick. Can you tell us a little bit about the group and the data you've been collecting?
So the group is comprised of initially eight beef cross, beef from dairy calf rearers, rearing in Herefordshire and one in Coventry. They're rearing anything between 400 up to 2,000 calves in a 12-month period. And one remit is they're all receiving similar calves of a similar weight and they're staying for a similar time. So aside from the variation between their systems, the calf that they're producing is quite similar. We had about 3,000 calves with good data recorded in the 18-month period across seven farms. One of the rearers went out of rearing at the beginning. We had them recording ear tag, which I determined farm of origin from. Some of them recorded the sire, which was kindly put on their passports by the farm of origin, but the recording of sire ID was really poor, so that's something that would have been quite useful to look at, but we unfortunately didn't have enough data to look at that. They recorded the weight the calf arrived on the farm, the date the calf arrived on the farm, the breed and sex, the weight the calf was at weaning, the date it was weaned, the weight the calf was when it left, and the date that it left. And then they recorded on top of that any health treatments that the calf received. So we were able to ascertain arrival weights, leaving weights, and growth weights to weaning and post-weaning and overall. So there was quite a lot of information available.
So you've done analysis on all that data. What are the main risk factors for pneumonia?
So we used all that data and built it into a model to try and look at some of the factors that might result in a calf being recorded as treated for pneumonia. The model basically has an output that tells you the risk relative to each variable. The biggest risk was posed by season, which isn't surprising. Calves that were reared across all the units were more likely to have pneumonia in the winter, especially last March. That had a real peak of pneumonia when that weather was cold and wet. Feeding system had a big effect, which was a bit of a surprise. The group were rearing in two main systems, so bucket feeding, going to once a day when they were over 3 weeks of age, or machine feeding. Unfortunately, the bucket feeders were also housing in conventional sheds. Machine feeders were feeding in igloos. So it's quite difficult to separate the environment the calf is kept in from the feeding system in the data. But the guys that were rearing in igloos with machines had less risk of pneumonia than those rearing in conventional sheds with buckets. The next biggest risk factor was the variation within a batch. So batches, let's say, made up of 40 different farms, posed a much higher risk of pneumonia than batches with less than five farms. So
what was the average batch size then?
The average batch size was 40 calves, and that's set by the fact that that's the numbers that most of these people want in and out through model quality.
Okay.
So the batch size was not really something that we looked at. We looked at the mix made up, because it's out of their control. So bigger mixes in the batch increase the risk of pneumonia. So the more farms that calves are coming from, the greater the risk. That's relatively obvious. More strains of the viruses, potentially different strains of mycoplasma that come from different farms, and then different strains of the common cold as well that come from all those farms, all mixed up. The more farms, the more virus, basically, or more disease. And then the final sort of dominant risk factor was breed, and the Holstein bull calves had a higher risk than the continental or the native cross calves. So two theories really behind this would be that there's no hybrid vigour in the Holstein bull calf. It's a purebred, and potentially it's an animal with lower value. Potentially they may not get the same treatment as, let's say, a valuable Belgian blue cross calf on the farm of origin. So they presented a higher risk of getting pneumonia.
So that's really interesting. So what would you recommend then to a rearer to try and reduce the risk from looking at those results?
It's challenging. The biggest risk, obviously, is winter. So making sure that the environment that you have for the calves is really optimised for young animals. You can't stop the winter, but what you can do is try and prepare the calves. So using coats, I think, is probably an underutilised tool in beef and cross calves. We certainly have some clients now that are using more coats in the winter because they realise they can't improve their concrete sheds, but what they can do is make the calves warmer if the weather is cold.
At what temperature do you think it's worth putting putting a coat on.
Certainly once you get below 5 degrees, definitely if it's sub-zero temperatures.
And is that for the younger calves?
And that's
calves,
for younger calves, yeah. Certainly younger calves. Once calves are consuming cake and they're starting to ruminate, then they generate a lot more body heat.
Right.
But certainly those at-risk calves that are 2 to 5 weeks old, they're not yet consuming large volumes of cake. They just had a change of diet, change of environment, and risk of pneumonia from mixing. Then the smaller ones of those and the younger ones should be prioritised with coats. Feeding system was very tightly tied to environment in the data, but feeding more milk powder seems on the surface to be of benefit when it comes to pneumonia risk. Obviously, you're feeding more calories. Batch risk is challenging again because you're at the mercy of your supplier of calves. Maybe in the future, we might get some more sort of integrated ways of farms with calves providing rearers in bigger batches. Or, you know, one thing I think we haven't looked at in this data is age spread. For instance, if you could take a group of calves that were born over a month, which we try and avoid in a rearing situation because it's not uniform, but if you could have a farm that provides you calves that were born over a month period, is that better than taking from 20 different farms to create a batch that's within 5 kilos? I think for disease risk, it's probably better. Should we be changing the expectations of the onwards rearers that they're not going to get a nice uniform batch, that there is going to be a bit more variation, but there's benefits to the calf in the calf rearing process? And that's something that I couldn't look at, really. We need more data and we need to do the exercise again, focusing upon that. Given how number of farms in the batch presented such a risk, that might be better for the calves in the long run. And the final factor is breed. So again, you can't really do a huge amount about that. If it's hybrid vigour that's driving the increased risk of pneumonia, then that's unfortunately the nature of the beast. If we're looking at a lack of care on the farm of origin, or potentially not as much investment in that calf, then it's really due to the people sourcing the calves to really engage with them. And we have talked about potential colostrum assurance schemes and ways of ensuring that those Holstein bulls get the treatment that they need and get the start that they need to support them through the rearing process.
And just out of interest, was there any difference in performance between the heifers and the bull calves?
We found there to be no negligible difference between the two. So some of the calves were recorded as steers, so they were recorded as arriving on farm already castrated, and they actually grew quicker than the bulls. And it's, so I suspect that there may be a castration is having an impact on growth rates, which wouldn't be surprising.
No. And is there a recommendation of what age they should be castrated?
If you can engage with the people providing you the calves and get them castrated before they leave within 7 days of age using a ring, then that would be better for the onwards process. It would reduce pneumonia risk and it would improve growth rates in those calves. Otherwise, do it at a time when the calves are at low stress. So do it away from big stress periods, basically.
I think one thing that we haven't touched on yet is vaccination, and when is the best time to do that? Because obviously that'll have a big impact on pneumonia risk.
Vaccine is something that you need to have a good talk with your personal vet on developing a vaccine protocol. And that's because they understand your system, the limitations of your environment, your feeding system, etc. And the type of calves you have coming onto farm. As a rough rule, the first 24 hours, the calf is relatively high stress. It's moved, it's changed environment, it's changed groups, it's changed feed. So it's going to have high levels of cortisol. So if you can avoid vaccinating them with, let's say, an intranasal vaccine in the first 24 hours, then that would be good. As soon as they're out of that first 24 hours and they're settled, then vaccinating them with an intranasal vaccine is a good start. And that protects them against the two major viruses that are going to make them very sick in a viral sense, parainfluenza virus and respiratory syncytial virus. And then subsequently, it depends on the system that they're going into. So if they're going into relatively intensive rearing systems after yours, then it would be a good idea to have a robust vaccine that was including probably an element of pasturella. And if they're going into a grazing system, then it may not need to be quite so robust.
Yeah.
But again, that's really something to discuss with your vet. Timings, I would do it at another handling, so you minimise handling. So if you're handling them 10 days later for something, vaccinate them at the same time and then boost them according to the data sheet.
And one question that I get asked a lot is, should we isolate sick calves from that batch, or should we leave them where they are?
It's likely by the time that you've identified the sick calf that there are other calves in that group that are sick, may not be clinical. If it's scouring, then absolutely isolate it. There can be some causes of scour precipitated by moving and stress that are really infectious and quite nasty, i.e. salmonella. So if the calf is scouring, then isolate it. If it's pneumonic, then you're unlikely to isolate it unless you can. You're unlikely to isolate it into a separate airspace.
Yeah.
And isolating it far enough away from other calves calves that it can't see or interact with them is going to be stressful. So I normally recommend not to isolate calves that are pneumonic. It's a difficult subject. People recommend to isolate calves and we don't all agree on it. But as long as it's been treated, I would rather not to stress it out and get it back on the feeder and keep it in the same environment, really.
And just the final question from me. You did some environmental sensing work as part of this discussion group. Can you just highlight what that showed?
So we put some data loggers in cages that sat at calf height, and we put those inside igloos and we put them inside the conventional sheds. And we did this over last winter, which was pretty bleak, and the winter that's just gone. It was a lot of data. We were measuring every 30 minutes. And in summary, it was very hard to link it to disease risk, very complex and beyond my abilities to analyse it. The key findings, I suppose, between the two environments were that igloos stayed warmer than your conventional concrete shed, and igloos warmed up a lot quicker than your conventional concrete shed. When I say stayed warmer, we're talking a couple of degrees. We're not talking
a lot,
but they stayed a little bit warmer and they warmed up quicker, probably because the heat of the snow would be a factor and the thermal properties of concrete mean that the panels in the concrete shed take a lot longer to warm. That was kind of the summary really from that. When we compared them inside to outside as well, so comparing the environment with the outside environment, the same was shown again. So know your environment, I think, is probably the summary.
Yeah.
Do some monitoring on your own farm. Have a maximum minimum thermometer or have a data logger somewhere in your shed.
Because they're not expensive, are they?
Expensive, and you can have it send alerts to your phone, and it's quite a useful tool. It can send you an alert and say it's below 5 degrees and perhaps act upon that.
On. Thanks ever so much, Nick. It's been great chatting to you. I hope you've all enjoyed listening.
Thank you.
The next HDB podcast will be brought to you by the Consumer Insight team as market analysts Zoe Averson and Grace Randall discuss potato markets with a close look at chilled and crisping potato sectors. You can find out more by keeping an eye on the podcast section of the AHDB Potatoes website.